everybody. This is Rebecca Lemke, author of The Scholar Virgins. Today, I have a guest. His name is Kenny Lyons, and we're going to be talking about a bunch of different stuff relating to courtship. Hey, Kenny.
Hey.
How are you today?
Oh, pretty good. Just got done with work and sitting here just got done eating some tacos, so.
That sounds awesome. I have a pot of soup.
Great.
Nice. All right. So, what got you introduced to purity culture and courtship?
Oh man, that goes way back. Cause I'll start at the beginning. I was about 13, and my mom, like, she wanted to take me to these Bill Gothard seminars, which you've heard about, obviously. Well, read about it in your book. Anyways, she wanted me to take me to Bill Gothard seminars, and so we went to one of those, and then we went to another one and another one, and it got to be something that, like, I just kept getting drugged to them, and then I wound up getting drugged to a couple other courtship seminars and stuff like that, and it was basically just my mom taking me to them.
Nice.
You know, and, like, I'd ask questions, and then I'd ask a question, and she'd reply with, oh, that's because it's scripture. You know, it wasn't any solid answer for it.
Yeah.
Anyways, you had the same experience, or?
Yeah, especially in sort of our conservative homeschooling group communities, where anything that was said, even if it wasn't scriptural, was backed up by scripture. And that was one of the more damaging things for us, because we're not just letting our parents down, we're letting God down.
Well, anyways, you know, I asked the questions and it's like, oh, that's scripture. And, you know, that to me is like, I've said it a lot, but like I say, courtship is a cult. And like a lot of people, they're like, oh, why are you calling it a cult? Why are you calling it a cult? Well, it's spiritually manipulative like a cult, because they basically created this thing and they put it on the same level as a moral.
Yeah.
Because for some people, you know, do not date is equivalent with do not steal.
Yeah.
So that was a big deal. And another thing that, like, I've run into a lot is, you know, when trying to explain this stuff to people is, you know, they just don't get it. Like, they look at you like you're an alien when you try to explain how restrictive some of the stuff really was.
Yeah.
I remember going to one seminar in particular where I don't even know what the guy's name was. It wasn't Bill Gothard. It wasn't Harris. It was some other older gentleman. But anyways, he was talking, and, you know, what he was preaching was that a phone call was considered a date, and that there should be no unsupervised phone calls until the couple was married. So, and I'm serious. You know, I wish I knew what it was so, like, I could get it and play it for people and be like, this is what I was taught.
Wow.
You know, so, and, you know, of course, like, I remember in your book, you brought up the hand-holding and hugging and stuff, but, you know, this is, like, even a step beyond that. It was, like, no phone calls, you know, so that was, like, the first time I started calling girls and stuff and getting calls from girls at home. It was like I'd plan it for when my mom wasn't around, so it was, yeah, I felt scandalous. It was kind of cool, but.
That's adorable. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I can totally see that. We did sort of have that where we weren't allowed to talk alone at all. But I think the thing for us was most of us weren't allowed to have cell phones or email addresses. So that was kind of completely out of the picture.
Well, the thing is this, like you said, you're 21, right?
Yeah.
There. Well, I'm 32. So, like, it's kind of a different time frame.
Yeah.
Because when I was... when I was your age, like, I didn't get a cell phone until I was 22. So
yeah.
if that kind of puts in perspective things a little bit.
Yeah.
So, like, here, when I was a teenager, I was getting calls on the house landline.
Oh, no. So your mom could go pick up another corded phone and listen in? Oh.
Except, thankfully, we only had one phone. But, like, the one time a girl did call, my mom did pick up. It's like, yeah, there's a girl online on a phone for you. So, I mean, it didn't. I thought it would, but it was still like, oh man, am I going to get a lecture after this? But
that's hilarious. Yeah, I totally get that. Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah, I know that was super popular when I was younger, the whole you can't talk to somebody alone thing on the phone. But because we weren't really around folks at that age with a cell phone. That wasn't a thing, but also, I think even that was a little bit too far for my homeschool group and for my other communities that promoted it, which is weird, is really weird considering they, like, we would get in trouble for talking together in groups as people of the opposite sex. But that, for some reason, was like, oh, no, crazy people like the Duggards do that. Like, no way.
Well, that was something that I can remember being taught in church, but I don't think it was ever really enforced too much because it's kind of one of those unenforceable rules.
Right.
But we'll move beyond that a little bit. So anyways, you fast forward beyond all the brainwashing seminars that I was supposed to go to. They didn't really work too well on me, you know, because I was still like, oh, I'll go out on a date. I can take a girl out to eat. You know, I don't need to ask her dad to take out. So, I mean, it affected me, but it didn't affect me to the point where, like, I bought it hook, line, and sinker, you know?
Right.
So, anyways, you know, fast forward to my late teens, early 20s, there was a book out. Can you guess what that book might have been?
I Kissed Saying Goodbye.
That came out, and it was, like, it was the best thing since sliced bread as far as some people in our church were concerned, and they're like, oh, you should read this book. You should read this book. And the youth group, I know some of the people in the youth group were passing around. I wasn't really part of the youth group. I don't know how familiar you are with the Assemblies of God Church, but they have a group called Royal Rangers. And it's like Boy Scouts, but it's, you know, it's part of the church. But anyways, yeah. I was in that, not the youth group. So it was, there was kind of like we were segregated from the girls in that. And, you know, so it was kind of basically you could go to either that or the youth group. And I chose to go to Royal Rangers because, you know, I like camping and I liked all the other stuff that goes with it.
Yeah.
But anyways, that book was getting passed around. And I didn't read it at the time because, you know, it's like, oh, what's that about? Oh, it's about courtship. Well, you know, it's like, why do I need to read a book about it? I, you know, sat through, you know, what is the basic Bill Gothard seminar? It's like a week long. I sat through that 3 times. I sat through the advanced one a couple times. I sat through another one a time or two, you know, so it's like, I already know everything. So why do I even need to read this book that I know I'm not going to agree with in the first place?
Right.
So I actually didn't read I Kissed Dating Goodbye until, I think it was about a year ago, and same. That was just because I was kind of like, I was seeing what's in there, you know, how far Harris actually went with it. So, and I was actually surprised that, you know, his version was like a courtship light compared to the version that I was taught.
Right.
So that was, but still, you know, I, like, if you could see my copy, you know, I've got it all tagged and, you know, underlined, and like I it'd be fun to give it to him and be like, oh, hey, you know, I got something for you, here you go, and give him my copy. But anyways, you go through it, and as I was reading it, it was like, this is God's way, this is God's way, this is God's way. And it was basically, it's marketing something in an untrue way.
Yeah.
So if you disagreed with what he was saying, you were disagreeing with God. You know, I mean, not really, but that was kind of,
that was how it was promoted, for sure.
Yeah, that's how it was promoted, and that was the narrative of the book. There's all these parts where it's like, this is God's way, this is God's way. And then, like, reading the book, you know, there was a bunch of parts where, like, oh, men are like this, you know, and it's like, well, not really. And I thought it was really unfair to men. But anyways, that's beside the point. But anyway, that book came out, and, you know, so that's how that was. Yeah. And then as I got further into my 20s, you know, you start trying to date a little bit. And, you know, I mean, there was different issues. The main thing was, like, I started traveling with my friend's band. My friends, their brothers, they were in a Christian band. And I was a roadie because, you know, I was good help and I was their friend. So they let me travel around with them and eat their food and, you know, all that stuff. And we got to see all the cool bands, all the Barlow Girl and the Skillet and, you know, Family Five and all the cool bands we saw. And I remember one time, one of the guys and me, we were eating lunch backstage, and Anne Berlin was sitting there, and my friend was just so... Yeah, we're sitting there talking to the singer, Anne Berlin, and my friend was just so starstruck asking him all these questions. I'm like, dude, let the guy eat his food.
Oh, you know? My goodness. I would be starstruck, too.
You know, all those guys, you know, I just about stepped on John Cooper once. You know, not the rag or anything, but I just about stepped on him. He was working out in the morning. He looked like a dork, but he was ripped, whatever. He was more ripped than I am. But Anyways, where I was going with that, Barlow Girl. Yeah. You know, when they'd get on stage, I don't know how familiar you are with some of the stuff that they promoted, but they were big in the do not date thing.
Yeah.
You know, the whole true love waits. You know, don't date. You know, wait for God's match for you. All that stuff that goes on with that.
Yeah.
So I saw that preached to thousands of people. You know, at these big shows.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, it was kind of unnerving because it was like, okay, you know, that was kind of back, like at one time I did believe that there was one person for us all, you know, like one perfect person, you know, like the soulmate type one person.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, you know, that's going to make finding her really hard if she's being told that I can't, your people can't date.
Yeah.
So anyways, and the thing about it is like when you're around this stuff, it kind of soaks in you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they talk about sin and they talk about stuff like the people you hang out with, that's who you become.
Yeah.
Well, when you have these false ideas, even if you don't explicitly agree with them, they find their ways into your lives.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's why like some ideas they're floating around in my head even now, you know. So
I've noticed the same.
So, like, you can't just shut it off. That's what people don't understand. You can't just shut it off.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I saw this online thread the other day where they were talking about, it was guys talking about, you know, if you've been told no sex is bad all your life and then you get to the wedding night, what if you can't actually deal with that? And this one guy had said, oh, no, that's not a problem. You just, no, that's not a problem. And this other person was like, what are you smoking? Of course it's a problem. But, yeah, even.
Well, the thing about,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't want to interrupt you. But anyways, the thing about the internet is you got a whole lot of, everybody's a power lifter on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever heard that analogy before, but that's what they say. Everybody's a 250-pound power lifter.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Yeah, but I had that same experience, too, where it was my parents didn't teach purity culture, but everybody around me was into purity culture. And so that's something that's always really frustrated my folks because they were like, well, we didn't teach you this. Like, what the heck? And it's like a frog in a pot boiling. Like, okay, you didn't pour any salt in, but I was surrounded by it. So if you had been a part of it, I might have, like, gone crazy sooner. But I was still surrounded by it, and there was no way that that wasn't going to affect me.
Well, that's kind of what I've seen a lot. Like, when you talk to people and they go to their parents, you know, their parents right away, they feel attacked, you know, whether the parents taught it or they didn't. But, you know, and that's somewhat understandable.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is what's one of the jobs of a parent? Protect the kid.
Yeah.
So if there's these ideas floating around, you know, talk to your kids, communicate with your kids, listen to your kids, you know, I mean, they, you know, pay attention to what they're being taught at church.
Yeah.
You know, not, that's the thing. Cause like, I remember, I think even now, you know, people they send their kids off to youth group or whatever, and they just assume that they're going to be taught all things that are true and good and useful. You know, they don't take into account that maybe they're being taught something that isn't of the Bible, you know, that's out there, but.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember going to a youth group at one point. It wasn't with our church. Our church didn't really do a lot of youth group stuff. So it was with a different youth group that we had gone to, but they were visiting another church that they attended. And so all of my friends were going. So my sister and I were like, we want to go to this. Well, we go there and they start telling us that any rock music is bad, any country music is bad, anything that isn't Christian music is bad. And my dad's sitting there kind of laughing because we listen to everything, basically. And then they start talking about being a depetaled flower if you like this specific music or, you know, being damaged goods if you had read this particular book or, you know, being tainted for having a crush and stuff like that. And we came home that night because it was a couple, it was like a series of some sort that they were doing. And we came home that night and we told mom, yeah, the youth leader there said we couldn't listen to Sugarland anymore because apparently it's like really hedonistic. And she was like, to what? What? I do not let you guys listen to any bad stuff. And so she didn't let us go back after that. But I mean, she didn't know that that was what was going to happen beforehand because everybody vouched for this youth group and they had never done anything like this before. So it's kind of a bait and switch where they had everybody's trust and then it was bam, purity culture stuff.
Yep. That's it's interesting, like when you talk about the de-petaled flower and the like having a crush on somebody is bad.
Yeah.
I actually made up a word for that.
Yes.
The word is date-ginity.
It's because like
you know what that means. I mean, like you obviously like you can hear it and know what it means. It's basically where, you know, where they have this idea that like if a girl goes out to dinner with 15 different guys that she's somehow immoral.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's what keeps people from, that's one of the things, there's a lot of stuff that keeps, you know, guys and girls, gals from getting to know each other. But, you know, that's kind of, when it comes to Christians that were raised around this stuff, or even in church, that's a big one. You know, that there's somehow, you know, it's somehow immoral to like get to know people socially on a one-on-one basis. So,
yeah.
But
yeah, I'm glad that you like coined a term for that because it's so frustrating for me to try to explain that to people because they're like, I don't understand, like that's ridiculous. Well, that's how I grew up, so
yep.
But yeah, I'm glad you brought this up in the book too, is with the Tinder thing where, you know, as far as I knew, like all I've heard about Tinder and dating sites is, oh, they're like breeding grounds for sexual immorality and stuff like that, which granted they are in some ways. But the same thing when you had told me, yeah, this part of your book that you talked about Tinder, which I want you to talk about in a minute, but I don't know that I agree with that. I talked to my husband and I was like, I think this is kind of like Snapchat, where until I got on it, I thought it was for sexting. And then when I got on it, I realized that it was for sexting, but it was also for like stay-at-home moms who are bored and want to talk to each other.
Yep.
So it's a tool, and it's sort of neutral in terms of morality. But a lot of times Christians, at least in the circles that I grew up with, turned things that were neutral in morality, like sex and dating sites and things like that, into negative morality.
Yep. I think so too. Yeah. Online dating, that's a whole other topic. You know, that's, I heard a couple of girls one time, I overheard them, you know, there was a group of us that, we don't so much anymore, but we used to play soccer a lot on Sunday afternoons.
Oh, that's awesome. And,
oh yeah. It's great. You know, a bunch of homeschool kids getting together and, you know, having fun, but yeah. Everybody from, you know, young adults to teenagers. But anyways, one of the times I overheard these three girls talking about online dating and about how anybody that would do online dating is too desperate.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, yeah. And I was like, I mean, I didn't really say much because I was like, whatever. But, you know, how are you supposed to meet somebody? As far as I know, they're all still single. But, well, I think one of them's dating a girl a guy that, I think it's her friend's brother or something. But I probably should keep my mouth shut about that. But, anyways, yeah, it's viewed as desperate. And like the Tinder thing, you know, a tool is a tool, you know, whether it's like a gun or a knife or a screwdriver or a hammer, you know, you can misuse something or you can use it for something good and useful.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like Tinder, I've got a good friend that met her husband on Tinder, believe it or not.
That's awesome.
And I don't, yeah, it is awesome. And, she's a psycho. She'll tell you that. But but anyways, yeah, she met her husband on Tinder. But the thing about it is they're both Christians and they spent some time as missionaries in North Dakota. So I thought that was really cool.
That's awesome.
You know, so that was what got me on Tinder, actually, because it was like, well, hey, wait a minute. If it worked for them, maybe it can work for me, too. So I got on there, too. But
We but, should, we should, as like, just for fun, we should put your Tinder profile in the show notes. Be like, look, there's this good Christian guy. Go, go, go.
That would be funny. Yeah. That would be really funny. He's on Tinder, but you got to be close enough to him to find a, find his profile.
Oh, dang it. Okay, yeah. Well, I have listeners everywhere. So, yeah, let's do this thing. Let's get you set up for this podcast. No.
That's funny. It'd be like a Pokemon. Find Kenny. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. So, in the notes that you sent me, what is the cold approach?
The cold approach. Let's see, where is that online dating? Oh, okay. So that's long online dating. The cold approach is basically like, I'm walking into a store. I see a pretty girl and I want to, you know, find out if she's single and I want to get her number and I want to get to know her a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's something that is that is like a total taboo in the Christian homeschool circles.
Right.
I don't know if you as a woman understand that, but like for guys, like when I told some guys that I started doing some of that, it was like, wow, you have, I don't know a good way of saying this, but he was like, yeah, you have balls of steel. that's basically what the reaction I got out of it was.
Yeah. And,
like I've actually had some good luck doing the cold approach, you know, like one time, for example, I tried the cold approach and it didn't really work out too well. And I went in again and, I talked to her a little bit and she says, well, you know, the best way to get to know me is to come to my church sometime. So I did, you know, nice. So that, you know, it's funny how things work out sometimes, but, that's one thing that, a lot of most homeschool guys don't know how to do. I don't know how to do it either. But the story behind the cold approach is, a few years ago, one of my friends, like, he got hurt real bad. He basically took a crowbar to the head.
Oh.
he was working. And, you know, somehow he took a crowbar to the head and it messed him up real bad. And he wound up in the emergency room.
Yeah.
So another friend and I, we went to visit him and check up on him, you know, see how he was and stuff like that. So we go to the hospital, we check up on him, and long story short, they decided they were going to keep him overnight. So they took him up to his room, and a little while later, they're like, oh, well, he's all situated in his room. You know, you can come up and say hi and say goodnight and stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we're on our way up there, and the friend I was there with, he's a real good friend of mine, married guy. But anyways, like we'd run into these attractive nurses on the way up there and he'd be like, hey, you're beautiful. Are you single? And this is a married guy saying this, you know, wedding ring and everything. Anyways, they were like, no, I'm not. I've got a boyfriend or, you know, whatever. And my friend would be like, oh, well, he's single. And he'd point at me. So anyways, he did that over and over and over again on the way up to my friend that got hurt and on the way back out of there. So, but after the thing about it is seeing that and seeing how women reacted to being told that they were beautiful, you know, that really clicked something into my head because, you know, none of them disliked it, you know, and the thing about it is like, since then, like I'll see some lady in public and be like, you know, maybe I don't even try to get her number. Maybe she's older or younger. Maybe I can tell she's probably married or something, but I'll be like, hey, you're beautiful or something, you know, just interesting, you know.
That's like, so sweet.
None of them ever have a negative reaction. You know, it's none of us like get away from me or anything. It's always, oh, thank you. You know, it's always, there's always a positive reaction to it.
Yeah.
So that was really good for me, but that's kind of like my personal cold approach. That's kind of what I factor. I'm not very good at it, but you know, that's kind of what I do because I've experimented with a few other things too, but that's kind of my mainstay is just because it's simple and it's easy to get out of my mouth if I'm nervous, you know, mm-hmm. Not that I would get nervous or anything, but.
I love that. That's so sweet. Yeah, I know. I mean, we live in a college town, Thomas and I do, and I usually have my son with me. So I don't get that kind of thing a lot. But there will be like a random freshman guy with just like, I guess, a bunch of adrenaline going through her system, and like I'll occasionally get stuff like that. And they always look so shocked when I'm like, "Oh, thanks." Because apparently they think they're just going to get punched. It's really bad. They're so jumpy.
But yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah, it's. I know other girls that do that, and as long as I'm not like being followed or I get the creepy vibe or something, I'm like, oh, cool, thank you. But yeah, that's interesting.
Oh, speaking of creepy vibe, if you're wondering, all the thing with the girl that I went to her church with her when she said when she's like, oh, you should come to my church sometime.
Yeah.
I ended up feeling creepy and decided to leave her alone, but that was kind of amusing because it's like. It's kind of one of those things where, like, she wouldn't give me her phone number, and she didn't have a Facebook, and it's like, she's not trying to talk to me, and she doesn't seem to want to get to know me, so I'm just going to leave her alone.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just kind of, like, I was starting to feel creeped out of myself, so when that happens, it's like, yeah, I better do something different or, you know, go find somebody else to accost, but...
Oh, my goodness. So, do you feel like... do you feel like the dating market overall of secular culture, I guess, is different and difficult? Or do you think that it's all like, even in, you know, conservative homeschooling circles, it's all just harder because of courtship?
Well, okay. Here's my perspective. I think that dating is hard no matter who you are.
Yeah.
Okay? But I think that the courtship stuff made a hard thing harder.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of where I'm at with that. And as far as the nuts and bolts of it, like going and talking to random girls and stuff like that. I think that, I'm going to sound like an old guy here, but I think that with all the social media and the phones and the texting and stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can feel social without being social.
Yeah.
So like here, I'm sitting, looking across at the taco place I was in earlier and feel social in there. I could just pick up my phone and send a text. I wouldn't have to talk to the person next to me.
Yeah.
So I think in our culture, there's a lot of that. So I think we're kind of losing some of the nuts and bolts stuff as a culture across the board. But so that's not the fault of courtship. That's just kind of where we're at in history. But I think, you know, we're just people, and anything that somebody else can figure out, we can figure out too.
Yeah.
So if it worked 10 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it can work now. You know, if you go on the internet, there's videos of guys doing the cold approach and, you know, just getting numbers. And so it works, but people don't do it because they're trained out of it because they're used to being comfortable.
Yeah.
So they're used to being comfortable and socializing in a way that they're comfortable with, and face to face with strangers is not something that a lot of people are comfortable with.
Yeah.
So
do you feel like, it's harder to approach a total stranger or some girl who grew up in purity culture and courtship culture?
I think the total stranger is easier.
That's saying something. But yeah, I totally agree.
Because you, with a total stranger, you have no idea what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you get turned down, you know, why? You know, I mean, you have no idea what you're walking into. So, and there's nothing to lose. You know, she's not part of your friend circle.
Yeah.
You know? So whereas like if there's a girl in your friend circle who grew up in this stuff and you try to ask her out, then you risk like what do we call it? I say we because there's like a group of us guys that kind of we've been talking about this stuff for the past couple years.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a kind of social blacklisting that goes on.
Yeah.
So basically I'll use a friend of mine as an example. He asked a girl out once at a soccer game if she wanted to go have dinner with him. After that, he got kind of, she told him no and stuff. But after that, you know, he was kind of viewed as like a social blacklist. And I think I was probably on that social blacklist a long time ago. I mean, I did offer one of them $20 one time to go out with me. So, Yeah, it was basically like, I'll give you $20 to go to dinner and a movie with me. But that's one of the approaches that only works 50% of the time.
But. Yeah, that makes sense. So I know you have some really great stories because you've told me them over email. Do you want to tell some of the great purity culture, courtship culture, girl stories that you have?
Wow, there's a lot of them. Okay. The one time in 2014, a good friend of mine got married, and we were at the wedding reception. There was actually two wedding receptions. I didn't go to one of them because I stayed back home, but there was at the one wedding reception, there was this, the preacher was there and he was preaching. And at the end of it, he said, well, I want to, you know, pray for the single people and anybody that wants to, how did he put it? It was something like God bringing them someone, you know, or bringing them the one that they were supposed to marry, you know. So he was basically saying anybody that wants prayer for God to bring them the person that they're supposed to marry should come up here and we'll pray for you. Anyways, it was just silence. You know, nobody flinched and moved a muscle. Anyway, finally, one girl stood up, and she went up there. And I thought that was really interesting because that particular girl, she had told me and other guys over and over and over again that God didn't want her to get married and she didn't want a boyfriend and all this other stuff, you know, the typical stuff you hear, you know, I don't know. But I thought that was really interesting. And after she got up there, another girl went up there, another girl, another girl, another girl, but no guys went up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was an interesting thing. And I talked to the guys, you know, sometime after that individually. I'm like, well, you know, why didn't you guys go up there? And it was kind of a common thing that is just they didn't want to be viewed as desperate. Mm-hmm. You know, because when you've got these girls that view guys that are looking for a good woman as desperate, you know, you don't want to be viewed as desperate. So it was basically self-preservation there.
Yeah. So. That makes
but
sense.
The really interesting thing about that particular altar call is after it was done and all over and the reception went on as it had been, the girls started going to the guys and talking to them, which was weird. I've never had that happen. And that particular day, four different girls talked to me. They just came up and talked to me, you know, so it was like, hey, this is awesome. I wish this was normal. But I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. That's pretty interesting to me too, because I feel like with courtship and purity culture and all that stuff, we really take a passive role, women do, because we're supposed to sit and wait and be good stay-at-home daughters until Prince Charming falls out of the sky into our laps, except not into our laps, because that would be very, very inappropriate. But, you know, the only active role we really play is making sure that we're dressed appropriately and don't lead anybody on. So for women to be getting up and kind of going out and approaching men, it just sounds so odd to me.
Yeah, it was odd. It was like they kind of knew what they had to do. They knew unconsciously what they needed to do.
Yeah.
It was weird. I don't know. It was awesome, but what you said about the falling out of the sky thing, that reminds me of another story.
Yes.
I've got a friend that he's into these ultralight airplanes, right? Anyways, you know, I call them flying tents because it's like a go-kart with a tent attached to it.
Yeah. But,
anyways, when he was single, like he's been dating a girl for since last fall now. But when he was single, the running joke was that for him to find a girl, he'd have to fall out of the sky for her. Or for him to find a homeschool girl, he'd have to fall out of the sky. And that, you know, if a girl was waiting for that, that's probably who would show up is my friend, that particular friend. But yeah, he's still experimenting with the stuff. But
that's pretty great. That's pretty great. Oh, my goodness.
That is what happens when guys don't have girlfriends. They build flying tents.
Yep. We're reading a fantastic book right now on sort of what I guess, unhealthy sexuality in men does to society as a whole. Because if men don't have that outlet of a married, a spouse, and, you know, that being a good thing and all that stuff, we kind of get a little bit of dysfunction in society. And they don't do as well with work and just with their life in general. I thought it was really interesting because I've seen that, but I didn't put it in those words. So my husband, before we met, he had so much free time and just did basically whatever, but he was kind of listless, I would say. But now that we're together, I think we both have a lot more direction and purpose, and he does better at his job now. Because he has sort of a reason, I guess, to make society better, maybe? I don't know. I don't know how it works, but it's interesting.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
I know when there's girls that I've been interested in that have also been interested in me, or I thought were interested in me.
Yeah.
I know I was a lot more motivated. Whereas just as a single guy, you know, it's like, yeah, make enough money for what you want and, you know, toys and, you know, keep food in your stomach and, you know, then what, you know, I mean, you don't need to go off the deep end. I mean, you got to keep your sanity too. So you use little things to keep, like my thing, I like buying guns. Okay. So I'm a hillbilly redneck, Wisconsin. I live in the sticks, but anyways, that's what we do up here is we buy and shoot guns and kill Bambi and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's my thing. That's kind of my outlet, but it's a good thing you're not a liberal. I'd get a lecture, but.
Oh no. I shot Bambi once myself. So I was thinking about it too, with the passive and active roles for women. I think one of the other only active roles I saw women get into was kind of a counterintuitive one, which was putting a purity ring on their ring finger on their left hand so that men would know that they're taken by God.
Yeah, bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, my husband's talked about that.
That's a really bad idea. I remember one time I was sitting not too far from where I am sitting right now. I eat a lot of tacos, what can I say? But anyways, I was sitting not too far from here, and I saw an attractive lady, and I looked for a ring, and she had a silver ring on her ring finger. So I'm thinking, you know, it's hard to say what that is. You know, it was just that hesitation. You know, it was like, it could be a purity ring and it could be a wedding ring. You know, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So there was that, but otherwise I would have talked to her. I would have done the cold approach and I would have been like, oh, hey, you know, how are you? You know, you're beautiful. You know, I mean, I would have said it in a nicer way than that, but
yeah.
I mean, that's how I would have done it. But, let's see. But yeah, there was that hesitation there because it's like, what do you do with this?
Right.
So it's interesting that you bring that up because like, I know one girl, she wore the purity rings a while, she probably still does. I think she still does. But I was talking to her about it once, and her view was basically that if somebody was God's will for her, that it wouldn't matter if she had a ring on. And it was just like, I was trying to comprehend what she said. It's like, you know, because that limits you to the people that know you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because the thing about it is you could be walking past somebody at Walmart and, you know, that could be like the most awesome person ever for you. Or you could, I mean, most as a Christian, it's like you get taught this idea that, you know, they need to be in your circle of friends and, or like there needs to be like angels singing or they need to fall out of the sky or they need to be from your church. But, you know, everybody does things in public. You know, I mean, they go to Walmart, they go to the grocery store, you know, they go to the park. There's all these places that people could meet and don't because Christians are too scared.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, some of it is with the, just the way our society is with how we socialize on electronic devices. But,
yeah.
But you know, that's a big one is, yeah, I asked that one girl with the purity ring once, I asked her, I said, well, could you meet God's will? Or what did I say? I said, I said something on the order of, if you're at a farmer's market or church, you know, the guy could be just as good. And she's like, oh, yeah. I said, okay, now, where do you think you're going to actually get to know somebody? And she said, well, church. And I said, well, why can't you get them to know them at the farmer's market? So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And along those lines, too, about how rings scare guys. I've got another friend. It's actually the friend we were talking about earlier. Yeah, we'll talk all about her. She's awesome. But anyways, the girl that met her husband on Tinder, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, before she got married, she did a lot of traveling for her job.
Yeah.
So she, you know, she traveled, you know, hundreds of miles. She did insurance work and stuff, but. Anyway, she did all this traveling, and she did a lot of staying in hotels. And some of the hotels she stayed in were in not nice places. So
yeah.
One of the things she'd do, you know, as a single woman, was she wore a custom jewelry ring on her ring finger of her left hand. And so she'd look married, and she'd refer to her husband or fiance, you know, and just like be like saying, oh, he's going to come by later, or I'm on the phone with him, or, you know. It was a safety issue for her. It wasn't a purity issue. It was basically, you know, keep all the guys away to be safe because she was in a dangerous place. Or, you know, she was a woman, an attractive woman alone, you know, in a hotel, and she just wanted to be safe. So I thought that was interesting in contrast to the purity ring thing.
Yeah.
Because the friend that was using the ring specifically to scare away men, you know, to keep men away, you know, and you know, you get this whole subset of people that are like, oh, purity rings don't scare men away. But
yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Well, and that's interesting too, because I thought I was the only one that did that. That was actually why I got my purity ring. My husband and I met when I was 14 and we started dating when I was 16, but we already knew we wanted to get married by the time we started dating. And so I was in college very young. So I got harassed a little bit for that, and harassed for kind of obviously sticking out like a sore thumb because I was a young homeschool girl, and I didn't understand who Kesha was, and I didn't understand, you know, all these cultural references. I actually got teased really bad for not knowing what Trojan condoms were.
I'm reading about that in your book.
Oh, it was horrible. yeah, but I felt really scared because of what I had gone through with my friend being raped and things like that. So I was like, okay, well, we know that we're going to get engaged and married. So since we can't get engaged right now and I can't have a ring on my left hand right now, why don't I go get a purity ring and put it there and scare guys off with that? So I knew that that was what was going to happen. And I ended up not being able to get one to fit my ring finger, and ended up on my pinky on my left hand, but it still, I was like, you know what? I'm basically engaged. Leave me alone. So I used it for that, and I knew that. And I find it hard to believe that a lot of women didn't know that that would be the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some weird beliefs out there. You know, you talk to some people, and women are really, I think it's probably just because I'm a guy, you know, when you're a guy talking to women about this stuff, they always wonder about your ulterior motive. And, you know, with me, there's not really an ulterior motive. You know, I'm kind of direct about that, you know, so if I'm just asking a question, I'm just asking a question.
Yeah. But,
you know, so women are hard to talk to about it, but, there's some different kind of beliefs. Like there's some people have this idea that, you know, if God wants you to be married, it doesn't matter what you do.
Yeah.
So, and there's like, you can't, they have this idea that you can't do anything wrong if God wants you to marry somebody. And to me, that's just like, where do you find that in scripture? I mean, I suppose you could bring up Jonah, you know, but Jonah got eaten by a mighty big whale or fish or something, you know, so that sounds quite unpleasant, but.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, go ahead.
Then you bring in free will to it, and you bring in free will and other people's free will. It's like, you know, you go back to the whole the one thing, like the soulmate stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so you figure, say you believe in, this is kind of what got me to not believe in that. So say you believe in the whole soulmate, the one thing, right? Mm-hmm. But you also believe in free will. So say Bob is supposed to marry Sally, right? but Sally uses her free will to marry Steve instead. What happens to Bob?
Right.
Not only that, but if Bob was supposed to marry Sally, what happens if he marries somebody else? Mm-hmm. And then if he marries somebody else, what about the guy that she was supposed to marry? You know, see how it's just this like massive chain that just breaks everything? So it's totally illogical, but it's something people believe for some reason. And like, I believe there's one person after you get married.
Yes.
Okay. But before you get married, there's multiple possible options that are probably all just as good as each other.
Yeah.
You know, there's some that probably would work out better, and that's why we date. You know, we go around, we figure out what kind of person we get along with real well, what kind of person we don't. And, you know, I mean, when you're young, you think it's all about hobbies and stuff, but it's mm-hmm. beyond that. It's like goals, ambitions, personality stuff. You know, hobbies are hobbies. You know, I could probably get to like things that a woman liked and she could get to like things I like, but there's stuff that, you know, is more firm and solid about who a person is. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
and that's something that I think a lot of people missed out on when they were young, you know, that didn't date. Like I know guys that are in their late 20s and early 30s that are, you know, just starting to learn how to date and do the stuff that they should have learned how to do when they were teenagers, you know?
Right. So. Yeah, that was something that my husband and I mean, we were both sort of in courtships before we met each other. He for sure was. Since I was taught that crushes were emotional STDs and you were supposed to marry the first person you had a crush on, I had my first crush when I was like 7, and I waited for that particular man for 7 years. So while it wasn't technically a courtship, it kind of was, because some of the aspects of it were similar, and it just didn't have the, you know, okay, our parents are involved and stuff like that. It was, we were waiting until we were old enough to court, but I was waiting for him to do that. And so we both, in that time, didn't really get to look at other options and didn't really kind of get to know what other personality traits there were and things like that. But as we were very fortunate to figure out during that time what we did want and what we didn't want in those people. And that ended up being enough for us, because when we met each other, it wasn't, oh, you know, these people that we're waiting on are the people that we're supposed to be with. We had both gotten to the point that we were really questioning that soulmate thing. And by the time we got married, it was, you know, we are the most practical match for each other, because we are of the same church body. We believe the same things about relationships and theology and, for the most part, parenting and things like that. So, I mean, we were very fortunate to have that, but a lot of my friends who are still single don't know what they want, or they have this long list of traits that this guy has to have.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, it drives me nuts. It has to be like a certain body type and a certain height and a certain hair color, a certain eye color, and he has to be this theology and all this stuff. And I'm like, you really need to pick a couple of these things that are very important, because this is way too long of a list. This guy doesn't exist.
That's interesting you bring that up, because number one of the things that I've run into a lot is the whole people the thing that you hear is, oh, I'm not going to settle. Oh, I'm not going to settle for less than God's best. And, you know, they have this idea that what God's best is somebody who's perfect. Well, are there any perfect people? No. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's this idea, this never settle idea that, you know, was taught alongside courtship and the purity culture. And it basically what never settle, in my opinion, was supposed to mean is don't sin.
Yeah.
You know, behave yourself. You know, it never settle wasn't intended. I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, I haven't looked too much into that. I don't remember how never settle was preached or anything, but it wasn't don't settle for somebody who's absolutely perfect or who isn't absolutely perfect. But so I think people just have that idea that, you know, people need to have all these traits. It's like this one friend was dating this one girl, I don't know what the deal was between them. But anyways, it's like, you know, I told him, he's like, oh yeah, I told her that we should see other people. And I'm like, well, why? And he kind of tried to talk a little bit and explain it, and I'm like, well, you don't seem to have a reason. It's like, you think she's attractive, you get along well together, you know, she's a Christian as far as you know, what's the deal? You know, so it was just kind of like things weren't perfect, and, you know, that's, it was just kind of weird, you know? Yeah. And I mean, I'm guilty of that myself some, but, you know, it's, that's one of the things that, like, it gets in your head and it's hard to get over. But, and I think a lot of times, like, people point fingers at men, you know, they're like, oh, you just want a supermodel, or you need a 10, or, you know, you just need a 10 to date, you know, you need a supermodel or whatever. But I think it goes both ways, especially like talking, you know, talking to really honest women. Women care about looks just as much as men do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so, yeah.
Which is interesting. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a few things where men and women are basically the same in, and then that is one of them, you know, so. I mean, that's a whole other topic in itself. We can take a little rabbit trail there, but that's a whole other topic itself is like the guilt with some of these homeschool guys and talking to girls because they're pretty.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember first time, for me, it's never been an issue. It's like, I'm good looking. I'm good enough looking. I want somebody who's good looking, you know. I don't want to, you know, go home and, you know, there's some lady there that looks like she took a shovel to the face or something, you know, but yeah. maybe I'm vain. But the thing about it is, you know, there's some evidence to suggest that what men and women consider attractive in the opposite sex has something to do with genetics. Mm-hmm. Okay. And for most of human history, there were no doctors. You know, what we had to rely on was good genes, you know, because what you want in a partner, like a husband, wife, you know, and kids, is you want somebody who's going to be alive a long time to help you raise the kids. You want kids that are going to survive into adulthood and make their own kids. I mean, this isn't stuff people actually think about. This is stuff that God wired us for.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why we seek out these things, because what we view as attractive is typically healthy. Mm-hmm. It's like for me, like as far as body type, what I personally view as attractive is somebody in the middle, you know, not somebody super skinny, not somebody super big. And, you know, that it's healthy, you know, and that's like, if you look at, there's a lot to it, you know, if you look up the science stuff to it. So yeah. That's kind of cool. But there's all this guilt. And like, I talk to these guys that they have this guilt over, you know, I don't want to be lusting. I don't want to, you know, I need some other reason to talk to her besides she's pretty.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big hang up a lot of guys have, is they're like, well, you talk to her just because she was pretty. It's like, well, yeah, why not? You know, I mean, why else am I going to talk to the girl at the farmer's market, you know, because she has, you know, she has kale in her bag or whatever, you know, I'm not going to talk to her because of that. I'm going to talk to her because she's good looking. But
yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Maybe I'm like super scandalous, and maybe it's just how I've aged. I'm just like, y'all need to chill. Like, it's totally fine. And I think it's normal, but yeah. Yeah. I have heard quite a bit about, you know, guys feeling bad about finding women attractive or wanting an attractive woman. And one of the books that really shaped my thinking on that was His Needs, Her Needs. It's a really, really good. I recommend it to like everybody, because it helps a lot to set you up for a marriage. And it helps you to sort of flesh out what your biggest needs are. And if you have, you know, the person that you are dating or want to be married to read it, then it can help them with that as well. And it can really set you up for a better foundation than you would otherwise have for the relationship. So I'm looking at our notes, and you have something here about dating, training people for divorce. And you also have this in quotations, love must be tough. Is that from a book?
Okay. In the notes, dating trains people for divorce. Have you ever heard that saying?
Absolutely.
Okay. I kind of figured you did growing up around the whole courtship and purity culture thing. But so there's this idea, you know, for those that don't know, there's this idea that, you know, the more you date, the more likely you are to get divorced, which I think is completely out of control.
But, yeah.
Anyways, let's see. Okay, so dating trains people for divorce, or that's what they think. So what you wind up with then, okay, is you wind up with a couple who are together. You know, let's say they're in a courtship, right? Mm-hmm. So what are they going to do? They're going to do everything they can do to make this courtship work, right? Probably, you know, I mean, because, yeah. I mean, if you believe all this stuff, and if you're in a courtship, you got to make it work, because otherwise you're basically just dating. And the more people you court and, you know, it doesn't work out with, the more likely you are to get divorced, or so the thinking goes in these circles, right?
Right.
So, you know, you're doing a lot of unhealthy things, and so you're, that leads to people staying in relationships that they should get out of.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, they're trying so hard to stay in these, and the whole love must be tough thing. That's actually from a James Dobson series. A good friend of mine recommended to me.
Yeah. But
I think that's what it's called. I'd have to look back and see if that's actually what it's called, but I think it was Love Must Be Tough.
Well,
but
actually, one of the things. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
One of the things that James Dobson talks about in that is he tells a story, and the story of when he dated his wife, you know, would totally be scandalous, you know, for homeschoolers. And he was basically using it as an example, as, you know, this is what's natural, this is what works. But what happened with, I'm going to butcher it here, but what happened with him and the woman that he was dating that became his wife was she told him one time that she wanted to see other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so instead of, you know, doing what a courtship person would, you know, and try as hard as they could to hold on to this, because they can't break up with people because dating is training for divorce, supposedly. Instead of doing that, he said, you know, there's some girls I'd like to try dating too. You know, so he kind of like agreed with her and was like, yeah, you know, I have options. I could go see some other girls. You know, this might be good. This might be kind of nice, you know, but that wound up bringing her back to him. Because
wow.
she basically saw that he wasn't this puppy dog that needed her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wanted her, but he didn't need her.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're at that point. But so I just thought that was interesting, that especially, you know, coming from James Dobson, you know, I've read some Focus on the Family stuff. Like, I actually have an old paper that is just some stuff out of it, but it's actually from a Focus on the Family, and it was pro courtship. So yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting that it was James Dobson. But that particular Love Must Be Tough series,
yeah.
that was after it was kind of like, there was this time in the late 90s where courtship and stuff was really popular, and then it kind of it was a fad, basically. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand, is that it was a fad, and
yeah.
You know, it wasn't God's will. It's not, you know, it's not God's way. It was a fad. It was like, you know, oh, maybe you're too young to remember this, but do you remember those jeans that they wore back in like 2000 that were, what did they call those? They had like, they weren't bell bottoms, but they, you know, they were just like huge.
Yeah.
They were like cartoony. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. It was like that. You know, I mean, they were cool for a while. And that was, well, I know one girl that looked good in them, but that was about it.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I don't know. I think that's one thing that there's just all this fear surrounding dating when it comes to Christians. And, you know, like that one's a big one, is, I mean, who wants to think about getting divorced someday? I mean, nobody wants that.
Yeah.
So when you tell somebody, it's always some, it's like emotionally manipulative. You know what I mean?
For
like,
sure. Yeah. A lot of it is.
You either use somebody's emotions against them by what's the word? Hyperbole.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Yeah.
You blow things up and use, you know, get people's emotions pumped, and, you know, you have that. And that's kind of what, like the silver ring thing rallies and stuff like that, you know, to go back to the ring thing for a minute, you know, you have that, you get people pumped on that. And then you have the spiritually abusive stuff, like that's why, like I said, it's like a cult, but, you have the spiritually abusive stuff that tells you, you know, that if you're not doing this, you're outside of what God wants. And who wants to be that? I mean, if you want to be a good Christian, you know, you want to do what God wants. So, I mean, especially if you're a kid, you know, maybe you don't understand the Bible in context, or maybe, you know, you're doing your best. You know, you're just a kid, but you know, there's not a whole lot of people who would call themselves Christian that don't want what God wants, I think, you know.
Yeah.
That would actually come out and say, I don't want what God wants for my life. So, but it's manipulative and abusive. So,
yeah. But. Yeah, that's interesting. I did not realize that Love Must Be Tough was some kind of series. I actually have a book in my living room, I think, that it's been recommended to me over and over and over again. And it's by James Dobson, and that's what it's called. So that's why I asked about it. But that's really interesting.
I think that's the same thing, because he was talking about the book. I think it must have been like a radio series to go along with the book, maybe.
Oh, nice. Interesting. So, well, I'll have to crack it open now.
That should be pretty. Yeah, he probably tells that story in there. But basically, yeah. Like, he used all these examples of basically telling the basically, like, say the man was having problems with the woman. He'd say, well, don't be her puppy dog.
Yeah.
You know, or like if the woman was having problems with the man, he'd say, don't be his puppy dog. You know, don't go to every possible length, because that drives people away, and this is why.
Yeah.
So,
I think that's probably such scandalous advice, but I honestly, at this point in my life, I'm like, yes, that's how it works. Like, I think there's psychology behind it. I think there's a lot of practicality behind it. Yeah, that's really interesting. So, what advice do you have for men who are currently trying to go through the modern dating market after having gone through courtship and are just really frustrated and stuck?
Well, I'd say, you know, for one thing, you know, check out the resources on YouTube and the rest of the internet.
Right.
There's the Return of Kings that your husband said that, you know, he went there, and I found some good stuff there. There's actually some stuff on approach anxiety that I found it really helpful.
Oh, nice. On there.
You know, that's actually the term that's used. Like, that's the biggest thing that, like, if you're coming out of courtship and trying to start dating, you know, you need to Google approach anxiety.
Yeah.
Because figure out how to get past that. And, like, I'm an introvert by nature, so it doesn't come easy, you know, being social. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. I'm just, you know, an introvert. I mean, I'm not shy, but like, I don't go out of my way to talk to people unless I really try.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah,
but that's just who I am. But, you know, when it comes to women, you know, that's something you got to get over. And the thing about it, one trick I found too, and I actually found this, where did I learn this trick? I found this in a book called, it was called Mate, Becoming the Man Women Want, or something like that. Yeah. But anyways, is basically talking about approach anxiety, and it was talking about, like, say I was to approach a supermodel, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just, you know, use it, well, you know, basically the best looking woman that anybody can think of, you know, just mental picture, okay? So I'm approaching her, right? And normally I'd be, you know, nervous because, you know, she's so pretty, I got to get this right. But what you do is, in your head, find out something that she can improve on her appearance, right?
Yeah.
So if there's something she can improve on, she's not perfect. And if she's not perfect, you can talk to her.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought after that, it was like, wow, nobody's a 10. I can be like, you know, she's got this, she can improve on this, she can improve on this, she can improve on. Yeah, I can talk to her, you know, so. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for the advice. I will add a note too, because my husband's going to be scandalized that Return of Kings, he was mentioned with that. it is a good site for just male psychology, I think, and female psychology. There is some really scandalous stuff on there, and it's not exactly Christian. So use discernment and just be prepared for a little bit of a shock, because, yeah, it can be very interesting. But it is a good resource for male and female psychology. Yeah.
Another resource, like if you go to YouTube and type real social dynamics, there's a lot of really interesting videos. Like, there's this one guy, he calls himself Tyler Durden, you know, like Fight Club, but yeah. He calls himself Tyler. You know, like you say, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, from a Christian homeschooler standpoint, is scandalous stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good stuff there too. And it just blows my mind that there's no Christian guys out there making these kind of videos. Like,
right.
There's all kinds of videos. Like, if you go to, I'm kind of a YouTube addict, but if you go to YouTube and you type Christian Tingle, there's
those videos are amazing. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. But
absolutely.
It's like, we know to make videos like that make fun of it, but nobody's making helpful videos.
Yeah. Somebody needs to get on that, y'all.
there's all that stuff. But yeah, the real social dynamics videos, they're, and the thing about it is like in the real social, I sound like I'm working for them. That's terrible. I think it's cool in their videos how they don't just talk about like canned material to pick up women. Yeah. They talk about things like how to use your voice to fill a room, you know, just,
yeah,
you know, how to, you know, like body language and all this other stuff that adds up. So
that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm so excited about this. I hope that there is a lot of guys and girls out there who will get a lot out of this episode, because I think there's some really good stuff in here. And I think it's just cathartic to talk about all the random things that we've been through with courtship. So thank you so much for being on, Kenny.
You're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys can probably, let's see, is your Twitter handle, I hate censorship, but hate with an 8? Is that it?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So you can find Kenny on Twitter there. And what were you going to say?
Or they can find my, send me an email. I don't care. I'm, I hate censorship@gmail.com. It's IHH and then the word censorship@gmail.com.
Sweet.
So send me an email. Let me know what you think. Tell me I'm crazy. I don't care, but.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've gotten hate mail before, not over this, but.
Oh, no. Yeah, please don't send him hate mail. I would feel really bad. If you don't agree with him, then please just, like, either say it nicely or don't say anything at all, because hate mail sucks. I've gotten some hate mail. Anyways, that's a great note to end it on. Thank you so much for being on. If you guys would like to hear more podcasts like this, and especially if you'd like Kenny and I to do another podcast, because we're currently talking about it, let me know. You can tweet me at New Crunchy Mom, or you can email me at Rebecca@NewCrunchyMom.com. And if you are just so excited about this episode and want to listen to another one right away, you can find more episodes like this one by going to iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I love you guys, and I'll talk to you later.